is a great step forward, you know, and it doesn't necessarily mean that people will be in the healthcare they need. It's one thing to have the policy. It's just another thing to actually see the reality. But, you know, it's a huge step forward. At least they won't be denied treatment any longer, you know, for under their Medicare plan. So that was really, really awesome.
So that's a national change. Is that right?
Yeah. It's federal law. So that's a change that impacts, you know, folks getting that care in Mississippi or North Dakota or Oregon. So yeah, really, really welcome.
Wonderful.
Other things that are huge steps forward include, I don't know, this is a small one, but, you know, outside New York City just implemented a municipal identification card and are allowing people to self-determine their gender identity, you know, which is a huge step forward. You know, it's not, they're not requiring people to show evidence that they've had surgery or, you know, a letter from their doctor. You know, it's people know who they are and they should be allowed to self-determine their gender identity. You know, it's not something new. It's something that a lot of other, you know, countries have done, and we just welcome this change. It's a huge, huge step forward. Another really welcome breakthrough was that the Department of Education has finally defined the sex discrimination to include gender identity, which was a huge step forward as well, because that makes it, you know, very clear that, you know, schools that discriminate against transgender or gender nonconforming youth, you know, are discriminating under the law. So that was really welcome. And I think the last time we talked to you, you know, California was facing a referendum on our law that we passed, you know, the Safe Schools and Opportunities Act, you know, that would allow trans youth to fully participate in their sports activities in California and use restrooms and locker rooms that are consistent with his or her gender identity. And that failed. So really, really good news. That was a few months ago. And
so that leaves intact the Safe Schools legislation. Is that right? Wonderful.
Yeah, exactly. So really, really, really great step forward. You know, in California, San Francisco and Los Angeles, you know, the largest school districts already had, you know, really good policies in place and had, by the way, had them for 10 years or more and never had any problems, you know. And so this just makes it, you know, clear, you know, that the law protects, you know, trans youth so that folks who live in, you know, more rural districts or wherever in the state, you know, can be sure to have, you know, a full education and a full experience, you know, that their non-transgender students, you know, experience. So, yeah, really, really welcome news.
Wonderful.
I don't want to bore you with all the details, but, yeah, just some really welcome advancements, yeah.
Well, that's pretty wonderful. Sasha, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the program, Alan. I really appreciate it. Thanks for all the great work that you do with Out Loud.
Thank you. Thanks for mentoring me and becoming a host here on Out Loud.
You do a wonderful job. Students become the future.
We will talk with you soon, Sasha. Thanks so much.
Okay, take care.
We're going to hear Bye. Blood Orange. That was Blood Orange. Find us on Facebook, folks. KBOO Out Loud. You can find out what we're going to do on each show each week. We're here on Tuesdays from 6 to 7 every week. You can also find out some of the events that are happening in town that are related to LGBT issues and activities and events and fun stuff. It's impossible these days to keep up with everything that's happening in the city, but we post stuff that comes across our desks that we think you might like to know about. So KBOO Out Loud on Facebook. Find us. We're here with David Robinson. He is a Portlander who has spent time over the past few years working in Uganda, and he's going to talk to us a bit about a film, Call Me Kuchu, that'll be showing here in town next week, next Thursday evening.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And how that film came to be. David, welcome.
Thank you, Alan. It's great to be here. Yeah, Call Me Kuchu will screen at the Hollywood Theater next Thursday evening at 7 p.m., and tickets are $8 and available already. Advance purchase. There's a link on the Hollywood website. We also have a Facebook page called Call Me Kuchu Screening, so people can go to that and get more information. The film itself is an award-winning documentary that follows the lives of, in particular, David Kato, who is a Ugandan activist who was killed during the filming of the movie. It also details several Ugandan activists. It gives their personal life stories, and throughout the movie, the primary thread, in my opinion, is about really showing how they have maintained or overcome the sense of victimhood in the face of this growing homophobia. And the homophobia is a direct result of radical American evangelical intervention. The film it sort of pings between personal stories of the Ugandans telling several characters, I think at least four, if not five, telling their personal stories. And then it goes along with footage of what happened when these three American radical American evangelicals went over and sort of stirred the pot.
Indeed. And we know one of them. Scott Lively.
Scott Lively. He used to be here.
Indeed. The 90s in particular, we had an anti-gay ballot measure every 2 years through the 90s and beyond.
Right.
I think for 10 years solid. And folks came together and we beat back every single one of those measures. Mm-hmm. I think the first one was pretty close.
Yes.
And then, we got there. We got through it, and
we got there. And Scott Lively lost his battle here. Mm-hmm. Scott Lively, Lon Mabon, the Oregon Citizens Alliance, and Scott Lively didn't stop. He and other ministers took it to vulnerable populations. Took it to Uganda. He is also claiming a lot of the credit of the anti-gay sentiment and laws in Russia. So essentially, he lost his war here. Took it to a developing country or a country with vulnerable people, sort of showed himself as an authority on the subject, and really got some followers and some believers in that because it sort of fit in with his program.
Absolutely. And briefly, do we know much about how Mr. Lively, got the impetus or the backing or the funding to be launching these campaigns overseas?
Well, as far as the funding, I don't know about that. Unfortunately, I think there's a lot of funding for that still somehow. But I do know how he ended up in Uganda. In March 2009, he participated with two other radical American evangelicals. He was invited over to Uganda to participate in an anti-gay rally by a Ugandan minister. Mm. And this is something that footage of this rally is in the Call Me Kuchu film. There's also another film that came to Portland, I think about 4 or 5 months ago, called God Loves Uganda. It was recently on OPB. And there's footage in there as well. So he was invited to participate in this this rally, which drew thousands of individuals, and not only of the religious sort, but also parliamentarians and other professionals. Scott Lively was invited by the Ugandan parliament to present, and it was really a direct result from his time spent with those parliamentarians that the anti-homosexuality bill came into being in 2009.
So what we're really looking at is a situation where it's not just interpersonal or community-wide anti-gay efforts, but it's also to some degree sponsored by the Ugandan government. Is that correct?
Sure. Well, homophobia did exist there to some degree before, but homosexuality has always existed in Uganda, like it has everywhere. And culturally, there had always been a place for it in society. Not everyone accepted it, but it's still, it had its place. Those individuals who did not like it, specifically the ministers who have come away with, this imported religion, Christianity, especially evangelical, a more radical teaching of of Christianity, it really served their needs, their messages. So their involvement is what really made it explosive. And so I remember in 2012 when I was in Uganda, I attended a ceremony for Idaho, the International Day Against Homophobia. And one of my Ugandan activist friends, Pepe Onzima, I remember him saying that, they saw it from 2008 to 2009 to 2010, this marked increase in homophobia. It went for something like, he said, maybe 40% or something like that of the population. It was sort of a non-issue. No one would be threatened or attacked or imprisoned, to being something like 99%. And at that point is when the anti-gay law was introduced. People weren't, gay individuals or anyone who appeared to be different were a target. So
we have Richard Lucimbo on the phone.
Oh, great.
Richard, can you hear us?
Yes, Lou.
Wonderful. Hi, Richard. Welcome.
Hi, Richard. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
So let me, may I introduce Richard?
Please.
Richard is a Ugandan activist. He works for Sexual Minorities Uganda. He's the research coordinator, Richard. Is that correct?
No, research and documentation manager.
Thank you. Thank you. And Richard is actually one of the first Ugandan activists that I met when I sort of reached out to this community. I had read an op-ed by Frank Mugisha in the New York Times prior to my departure in 2012, and it just sort of instilled in me that I needed to reach out and offer some kind of support, some friendship. And Richard, you were the one who, Richard and I really clicked, and we've worked a lot together, and he has done a lot of amazing things over the past 2 years. So thank you for joining us, Richard. And maybe, I don't know if you heard what I was saying earlier, but I would welcome your input.
Yeah, thank you very much, David, for the introduction. Just to pick up from where you said, we're talking about homophobia and how it's been increasing in years has been passing. Evangelicals like Scott Live have played a very important role in ensuring that homophobia actually gets on an increase. The definition of who are homosexual in Uganda right now is that has been given by evangelicals who came with the phenomenon of saying homosexuals are recruiting your children, homosexuals are promoting homosexuality, and actually are receiving lots of funding from the West to promote this vice into your society. And being the fact that evangelicals or the evangelical church in Uganda and that its leadership is one that is taking a big role in terms of the community development and everything, the population believes so much in their pastors, in their reverends, and hearing all this every other time they go to church, the community has become very homophobic. And one of the attributes is because of the kind of information they receive, and it's one-sided, so the community is totally ignorant because they only know one side of the story, but we do not have a chance to explain ourselves as gay activists or as a gay community to say or to show what is wrong from the kind of story they're sharing. So, and with years, we've seen homophobia growing, and our space of speaking out and sharing with the rest of the community has also diminished in the greatest speed. And Scott Lively has been one of the leaders who, the evangelicals, who actually helped draft the Anti-Homosexuality Act, which is now law, and he has never hidden his support for this law. And currently, as Sexual Minorities Uganda, SMUG, we are actually suing him in an American court for his conduct and also promoting hate and discrimination and also homophobia in our society, which has led to so many people who are of the LGBTI community to be persecuted within their own homes, villages, and communities.
What is the current experience? This sort of it sounds like a pretty sudden brush up of this anti-gay sentiment in Uganda, and so how have the lives of homosexuals in Uganda really changed over the last few years with this push to make it unsafe?
Yeah, it's been very difficult for people to congregate, people to communicate or to share. I'll just want to say that before the evangelicals took leadership in terms of promoting homophobia, the African society, the Ghana community, was tolerant of people. And traditionally, as Africans, people appreciated diversity, and things or anything about sexuality was not something that was discussed in public. And the greatest principle has always been harmony. And regardless of the differences and the fights that people had, would always find a common ground because they all work towards achieving harmony. So this was like the principle. But right now, life has totally changed because people are now just facing a lot of persecution. And they've gone into hiding, and because it's very difficult to communicate or meet anyone. We've seen many people who are beaten off the streets. Trans people have been severely abused. We've seen people banished from their homes, families not paying or looking after their children just because they have been have been outed as gay, but it also has affected a society of like people who are presumed to be gay. They have also faced a lot of discrimination. So literally the community is in disarray, and whereby everything about your sexuality becomes a question. Mm-hmm. And also can lead to you being mistreated or beaten or even denied health services, because we've seen a number of people have been denied health services just because of their sexuality.
And I think Richard brought up a really great point about the harmony. I witnessed that. I've been going to Uganda, traveling to Uganda since 2008, several trips, lived there all of 2012. And, you know, part of what has attracted me to Uganda is their ability to live in harmony with such diversity. Muslims and Christians are friends. They support one another. They celebrate their religious holidays together. You know, you don't see that so much in the West. There's a lot of contention, a lot of war, a lot of problems. And the Ugandans, to me, in my experience, my first trip in 2008, I was just really changed and marked by what I saw in their ability to be to want to harmonize, you know, to respect difference. And so, you know, with this law's introduction that came after I'd already become familiar with Uganda, it was really disheartening and upsetting to me, particularly when I realized that it had an American root, that it was, and not only an American root, but I could trace it all the way back to Portland, to problems that we had here in the 90s that we were able to overcome. And as you, Alan, mentioned, only barely a couple of times in the early 90s. I mean, there were several measures, but he lost his war here. He took it there. And I mean, just the incendiary effect is, this has turned their society inside out. And it's really disheartening to me.
Now, next week, next Thursday at the Hollywood Theater, Call Me Kuchu will be screening. There's a couple of folks, Ugandan activists, who will be in attendance.
Yes. Richard, unfortunately, won't be able to join us, but we have two individuals who are going to be, or who are in the documentary itself that feature prominently in the film. We have two who are coming. John Long Jones is his nickname, John Abdallah Wanberry. He is in the film, and he will be arriving next week and be at Hollywood for the screening and through the weekend. I'm also still trying to coordinate a few meetings with him and the other Ugandan activists with community advocacy groups. I think this is a really great opportunity for our community and our community leaders to meet with some of these individuals who have had a profound effect in the face of great adversity. So Long Jones will be here, and then Bishop Sinyonjo, or Christopher Sinyonjo, will be here. He is also in the film. Both are featured throughout the film prominently. He is an Anglican priest who was basically shunned by the Ugandan church because he has advocated for LGBTI individuals and has refused to turn his back on them, saying that this is actually his understanding of God's teaching is that all individuals deserve love and acceptance basic civil rights. So because of that, he was shunned by the religious community in Uganda. He wasn't the only one, but he sort of stands out as one of the primary. And I personally witnessed, I mentioned a moment ago, the Idahut celebration in 2012 in Kampala. I had the good fortune of taking a seat right next to Bishop Christopher. And I'd heard of him, but it was really wonderful to sit and talk with him and realize how committed he is to serving the LGBTI community in Uganda and how much the LGBTI community relies on him. They're, he's become sort of their spiritual guide for many. And so he will be here, and that it'll be, I think it's going to be a great screening, and we'll have a Q&A after the film.
Wonderful. So I'd like to let folks know that the phone lines are open if folks want to call in and talk with our guests. 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I have a question for both Richard and David. Folks have a chance to come out and see the film next week, Call Me Kuchu, on Thursday evening at Hollywood Theater in Northeast Portland. They can meet a couple of these activists. What else can local folks do to help? I mean, it's facile to say, just say, well, you know, we're sorry that we sent our trash your way. What comes after for folks here who, you know, hate to see this happen and would like to reach out?
Right. I have a few thoughts, but I think I'll let Richard answer first, if you wish.
Sorry, I didn't get a question.
Go ahead.
So the question is, what can folks here do to help the folks in Uganda who are suffering?
I think there is a lot, and I must appreciate that folks there have already done a very tremendous job by the all these years when the bill was still in Parliament, and even at the time when it was passed by Parliament, by speaking out and showing that discontent, and also speaking and calling upon their government. And I think that is still required for folks here to speak to the government, to continue in dialogue with the Ugandan government, to ensure that the LGBTI people are protected, but also not to take away, like, the LGBTI people are the only special case. But I think it's very important to look at advocating for LGBT rights as rights for all citizens and all people in the world. And the other thing that the folks can do is support the local organizing by sharing about the work that the local organizations are doing. And this can be done on Twitter, this can be done on Facebook, and this would call for being in close contact with the organizations on the ground in Uganda, and to ensure that the correct information reaches out to the communities here, but also it's shared with the rest of the world. The other thing that they could do is, actually, we need their skills. We need skills of doctors, we need skills of lawyers, we need skills of teachers. Like right now, we are actually challenging the Anti-Homosexuality Act in the Constitutional Court. So our lawyers would need support from fellow lawyers to help them with lots of resources, which folks here have. They have access to internet, but also access to other resources in terms of cases and comparisons. So that's a resource, and folks here could be able to support that way. We have an LGBTI clinic in Uganda, and that needs medication, medicines. We need doctors, and if folks here can volunteer to come and work in that clinic and support it and ensure that we have all that it requires for a clinic to run, this would really go a long way to really support our communities. The other thing is to, for those who can, to support the local organizing with resources to push on the work that we are doing right now, because we are limited in terms of resources, but the demands and what we have to do in terms of security and also relocation, all that requires resources. But right now cases are so many, and the resources that we have are not enough. So if there's anyone there who can support in that regard, all those that are everything that I've just mentioned about, someone can find a way of coming in to support us.
And among the activist groups working for homosexual rights in Uganda. You mentioned earlier SMUG is one of them?
Yes, Sexual Minorities Uganda, SMUG, which mm-hmm. I work at.
Tell us a little bit about the work that SMUG is doing.
SMUG is an LGBTI umbrella organization, currently with 18 organizations, and we have four focal areas, and the first being advocacy in terms of laws and reaching out to the international community and local community to ensure that issues of LGBTI people are understood, and we continue to fight for laws that are discriminative, but also to bring to light the plight of LGBTI Ugandans. And the other area is research and documentation, where we document cases of violations and discrimination against the LGBTI people, but also try to make sure that the story of the LGBTI people in Uganda does not die, that actually the voices are recorded, the voices are stored, and also some of the issues that are coming from the ground are researched on and documented to ensure that the movement has a history, and also have a data bank of everything that is happening. The third is our capacity development. As a network, we are charged with ensuring and providing skills, and also working together with our membership to provide what is limiting in terms of how to reach out to their communities. And as a secretariat, we are able to do this through capacity development. And the last one is emergency response. We provide legal support to the community members in terms of a lawyer if someone is arrested, but also we provide resources if someone has to relocate to a safe place or if someone needs to be protected. We are charged with that responsibility.
Thank you, Richard. David, you suggested you had some ideas about how local folks can support.
I do. And I just to sort of segue from or add to what Richard just said, I in the time that I lived in Uganda, I witnessed Sexual Minorities Uganda SMUGs, what they did for the community. You know, anytime someone was arrested or had been kicked out of their home, they're the first responders. They're the only responders. This umbrella organization does that. So one way that we can help, first and foremost, is being aware. You know, I talk to a lot of people in Portland and all over the U.S. that don't even really understand that this is going on. You know, we've sort of move beyond some of these really painful milestones here in the U.S., especially in the Pacific Northwest. But that's not the case elsewhere. And as you said a moment ago, Alan, it was, you know, we sort of shipped our garbage abroad. So I think, you know, part of my goal with bringing this film here since the beginning is just so people can become more aware. So that's first and primary. As far as supporting organizations like Richard's, at the screening, we are working with an American nonprofit based in D.C., the Fund for Human Rights, and there will be a way for people, those people, as Richard said, who are in the position to make donations to this type of, continuing this type of work, especially now when there's so much to do for the security teams, that opportunity will be made at the screening. So I think awareness, supporting financially, and I also like what Richard said about providing skills. That's one way. You know, when I first met Richard and Frank Mugisha, the executive director of SMUG, I basically just said I wanted to be a friend, but if there's something I can do that would help in any way that I can do, let me know. And, you know, I guess, Richard, there were probably 2 or 3 weeks that we didn't do anything together, but then suddenly Richard asked me if I would look at a press release and just see what I thought about it. And so little by little, we started doing a little more, and he asked me if I had some free time on my weekends to do some research. I did that, and it was really great. I got to know the community. So I really like that Richard put in the plug for those with skills and time and energy and interest to give that as well, because it really changed my life to do that, and it's been quite rewarding.
A question for both of you, Richard and David. What about how we might urge our government and our governments, since there's, you know, we have multiple levels of government that we interact with. How can we urge our government to, you know, get involved and provide support to homosexuals in Uganda?
Thank you. I think the first thing would be to dialogue with our government in a responsible and respectful manner, in a way that it would not be taken as real colonialism, whereby leaders can talk to each other. The president could call the president of Uganda, or the secretary of state could speak to the president of Uganda, back doors, with no media, with no nothing, and discuss as leaders. We've seen that dialogue is the key to everything, and if that could happen, it could go a long way to really protect LGBTI people in Uganda. And the other thing could be, just as recent it was, is to deny visas to people who are actually promoting homophobia and who actually helped design like the anti-homosexuality law, but also continue to persecute the LGBTI people. The other would be supporting financially the LGBT organizations to continue the work that they're doing and ensuring that their resources, because it's very difficult to receive resources with organizations that actually are illegal in their country, because like sexual minority Uganda is not actually up to now registered by government. It's a political thing just because we are an LGBT organization registered. And so that would mean we are limited in terms of how we receive funding. But I think the government should come up with ways in which to support LGBT organizations with resources, given their registration status. And this could be working together with American best organizations that are doing work in Africa, but also are working with missions in Uganda, the mission in Uganda, to support the work that we are doing as sexual minorities Uganda.
Absolutely. I totally agree with Richard. And I think, Richard, you brought up something that's really important to me, and I think I know to you and the community, is that issue of respect. I think there has been a tendency for us in the West to sort of, especially when this problem came up, you know, a lot of people not even realizing that it had an American root, there was a lot of, you know, finger pointing and blame on the Ugandans, and in a very disrespectful way to both, you know, the parliament, the government, but also just this broad brushstroke of assuming that every Ugandan is homophobic. And that's just not true. And I think, you know, to the degree that we are able to educate ourselves and actually realize that the Ugandans can do this on their own. They just need some support, some outside support at this point, especially groups like SMUG, which, as Richard just said, doesn't have any support from the government, is an illegal organization according to their new law. Just educating ourselves and supporting in a very respectful way would be a good thing.
Wonderful. So the film is called Call Me Kuchu. It's screening next Thursday.
Mm-hmm. 7 p.m.
7 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater. $8. You can find out information at the Hollywood Theater's website, hollywoodtheater.org. Also, Call Me Kuchu screening on Facebook,
exactly.
And Kuchu is K-U-C-H-U. Richard, thanks so much for calling in and talking with us.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Sure.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, David, for joining us in the studio here.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us.
And we will see you next Thursday at the Hollywood. Coming up next, Hard Knock Radio. Thanks for joining us on Out Loud. Take care, folks.
You've been listening to Out Loud, KBOO's queer public affairs show. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday.